From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Sunset District.
In between Cupertino and Saratoga.
San Jose.
Oakland.
Antioch.
Half Moon Bay.
Yeah, same here, Half Moon Bay.
Coming up, a new documentary urges young people to become more socially and politically active.
To not participate. And that conversation would be undemocratic.
Also, older generations of black men reflect on the legacy they tried to leave behind for the youth of today.
We, too, were so busy trying to survive that we were not as organized and disciplined as maybe we should have been.
And we visit the country's first LGBT museum.
I think what this museum really does is to talk about sexuality, particularly queer sexuality, as a social and political process.
That and more today on Cross Currents. Stay tuned. Today we're starting with some artery, cultural coverage that gets you out of your chair and into the voting booth. Recent census data shows that fewer than half of Americans age 18 to 24 have registered to vote, and only a quarter say they actually voted. That figure is considerably lower compared to other age groups. For example, among 45 to 64-year-olds, nearly 60% say they voted. A new documentary film explores why young people appear to be so socially and politically apathetic. KALW's RTM's Konohov saw a preview of the film Regeneration.
Every time I think, that's wrong, that shouldn't be like that, I wish I could change it or whatever, but then I'm just like, you know, who am I?
Director Philip Montgomery got the idea to create a documentary film about apathy among young Americans back in 2006. George W. Bush was serving his second term as president, and the war in Iraq had been going on for 3 years. Montgomery and some friends were in their late 20s at the time. They were angry about what was happening, but they didn't know what to do.
For me personally, it was just a moment of self-reflection of why wasn't I personally doing more. And so that's really where I started to explore as a filmmaker the different influences that were sort of holding me back personally.
There's a lot of talk about the world's historic role that the great generation had. Then there's the 60s generation, which had a purpose. And yet the current generation is caught up in a crisis like no other. They're told that they're a me generation with no purpose, no world historical role.
The film, called Regeneration, took 6 years to create. It's organized in three segments, examining how media, education, and parenting affect young people's worldview. Montgomery and his team focused on his old high school in Minnesota.
I came from a very lucky childhood, great parents, great everything, but you know, I never really explored a lot of these issues myself. So in that respect, it kind of became early on a film that I kind of wish I could have seen myself in high school.
Over time, the project evolved from a critique of the Bush administration into a deeper exploration of activism, or the lack of it, in modern American society. Jeffrey Lerner is a co-author of the film. He recalls how his own focus changed after Barack Obama's election in 2008.
It was galvanizing, it was inspiring, it was hopeful. It was the first figure, I think, for any of us that are younger in our lives that were truly touched by something. But what happened, it was we got that man elected on a progressive campaign, and we immediately went back to our armchairs and our living rooms, and we said, okay, we've done our job, we elected our president, it's up to him.
Many of the young people in the film are like Claire Friedman, a senior at the Minnesota High School.
We aren't as active as the generations of the 60s and 70s. A big part of that is because we haven't gone outside.
I mean, from a business point of view, the ideal social unit is you and the television set.
That's writer Noam Chomsky, also interviewed for the film. Filmmaker Jeffrey Lerner says influences on young people are complex, as are the challenges facing American society.
There's a lot of people dealing with a lot of different things, and any, you know, there's not a Vietnam, there's not a civil rights that everybody is sharing in common and that can rally around. There's a wide spectrum of problems.
Problems like climate change, wars, political corruption. The film suggests that complexity of those issues might be one of the reasons so many young people feel powerless and apathetic. Matt DeRose is one of the film's producers. He says one way young people could start to participate is by voting in the upcoming elections. Back in the 1960s, youth voting was high, over 50%. It dropped down over the years, but has increased steadily since the year 2000, reaching its peak during the 2008 election. DeRoz says voting isn't the only way to be politically active. He also supports movements like Occupy. But he says it's just as important to elect politicians that young people feel represent them.
I don't think that one specific leader or one specific party is going to change what we're talking about, but at least we can have a voice and an attempt for those people to help us. And I think that that's incredibly important.
Regeneration is an attempt to start a conversation and raise awareness among young people in the United States. And this, the filmmakers say, is their own form of activism. In San Francisco, I'm Artem Skonohovs for Cross Currents.
Well, if you're a little beyond 18 now and you're wondering how today's teens feel about voting, we have some answers for you. Our friends at Youth Radio asked today's young people to reflect on the principles this country was founded on. They wanted to know two things: how well the U.S. has lived up to those ideals, and whether that impacts the way young people participate in government. Here are some of the responses they got.
If you look at our founding fathers, you know, they were all white, older, rich men. So I think when they wrote all men are equal, I think they meant all men, you know, that look like us, think like us.
We haven't really come that far in a lot of aspects of civil rights for human beings all across the United States. So I think we're definitely lacking in that sense.
The discrimination of black people, women, Japanese internment camps. There are billions of examples through American history.
I think a certain group of people have that ability to pursue happiness, but there's immigrant populations from all over whose liberty is always in question.
As a man, I'm definitely given a lot more opportunities just because of that. As a person of color, not so much.
Who gets to be liberated and who gets to be free?
We wouldn't have to occupy Oakland. We wouldn't have to occupy Wall Street. We wouldn't have to keep protesting and marching if we were all created equal. It's really a war between the rich and the poor.
There's some opportunities, you know, that I'm not going to have access to or that I have to fight remarkably hard to get.
The system that we have set in place now is just so divided, and it's so fueled by our inability to compromise and our inability to try to make peace with each other.
I wish that government took care of the people, and I don't see that happening.
I want to be optimistic and say that I do think my vote counts, but in a lot of ways, I don't feel that it does.
All votes count. It can be your vote that gets so-and-so elected. It could be your lack of a vote that doesn't get them elected.
I need to believe my vote counts. I need to have hope that young people can make a difference.
Those are the voices of Denise Tejada, Rihanna Godfrey, Asha Richardson, Sayre Quevedo, and Miles Bess. That story was produced by Youth Radio. So why do you think young people aren't politically involved? Call us with your opinion at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106, and leave a message. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. While young people strive to find their political motivation, sometimes the answers to our questions come from another generation. German philosopher and freethinker Friedrich Nietzsche once wrote, "We hear only those questions for which we are in a position to find answers." A group of artists have been hearing questions from the black male community for a while, and they decided to find over 150 black men from around the country who were ready to give thoughtful and difficult answers on some of life's biggest issues. The result was a video art installation called Question Bridge Black Males, now on display at the Oakland Museum of California. The project aims to promote constructive dialogue between black men and the rest of the nation, but also to break down limiting stereotypes about black male identity. In this second of five installments, participants answer this question posed by young New York hip-hop artist Robert Edwards.
Why didn't y'all leave us the blueprint? Peace.
I suppose some of us, myself included, feel like we did leave a blueprint. If you had experienced the euphoria that we felt during the 60s, when we would see one another on the corner, and it wasn't no such thing as you had to throw up some kind of gang sign. When you saw other black people, you went like this, they went like that, everything was fine. That's not the way it is now. I thought, me as an individual, because I can't speak to other people, I thought there would be a continuum. I thought if I raised my children a certain way, that things would stay that way. I thought that we were progressing. I underestimated the seriousness of our enemies. I underestimated them, that so much time and effort would be spent in dismantling those things that brought about self-esteem, those things that brought about self-love, those things that brought about respect for one another. A great deal of time and energy was spent dismantling that by our enemies. And it is our fault that we did not see that for what it was and combat it more thoroughly.
I think maybe we did leave you a blueprint. And yet, we too were so busy trying to survive that we were not as organized and disciplined as maybe we should have been. But speaking from the platform of Martin Luther King's civil rights movement, Martin Luther King never had more than 100 people on his staff, and that was only for one or two movements. He never had more than $500,000 a year to try to change the world. None of us had a blueprint. But what he taught us to do and what we learned from Gandhi in India was that we could find our own way by standing up for the truth.
Well, after the civil rights movement of the 60s proved to be very, very successful, I think blacks felt that we have crossed the threshold and it's easy going from here on in. But the worst was yet to come. I kind of think we thought that the waves would continue to roll, and we did drop the ball, only to find out later that other people were making plans and were putting certain kinds of Negroes and heads of organizations and paying them well. And they became the spokespersons for black people. And they became the protectors of the plantation, being paid by white people.
I think that we left you the blueprint. We just didn't tell you where it was. It's there. But we didn't just show it to you or lay it out. You had to look at us and see what we were doing to find out how to go about that blueprint. You see, some things can't be explained to you. Some things you got to look at a person, and then you got to see what it is that they're doing. The blueprint is you get an education. You don't just be in the middle of the road. You don't try to be with the kids who don't do well. You try to be the best, okay? You do as good as you can, no matter how angry people become, when you're really good. You know what? Success is not easy. It is not. If it was, everybody would be successful. It takes time. It takes hard work. And thus, everybody is not geared for hard work. Some people want it overnight, and it's not going to happen that way. And so what you have to do is, we old people, we've laid the groundwork for you. We've already put the blueprint out there. Now, you might not like that blueprint. You might want to alter it in some way. And you can. But if you alter it and it's not for the better, you will not achieve what us old folks have achieved.
You just heard the voices of former Black Panther and Chicago detective David Lemieux, Ambassador Andrew Young in Atlanta, and Reverend Herbert Oliver in New York. The installation Question Bridge Black Males is on view at the Oakland Museum of California through July 8th. It was put together by African-American artists Chris Johnson and Hank Willis Thomas in collaboration with Biate Ross Smith and Kamal Sinclair. For a list of the project's sponsors and information about how to get involved, go to questionbridge.com. or go to KALW.org to find links. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Another ongoing political struggle has been the one for gay rights. Today is Harvey Milk Day, and while today the rainbow flag flying over the Castro District is symbolic of the gay community, back in Harvey Milk's day, San Francisco was not as gay-friendly. Consider the words of Milk speechwriter Frank Robinson from a promo for the 2008 film Milk.
There were a lot of gays living in town, but there was no such thing as a gay community per se. Gays in town would elect friends of the community who would be your friends until you came to a rock and a hard place and then they didn't know you.
Almost four decades after Milk came on the scene, San Francisco is home to the first gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender historical museum in the country and only the second such museum in the world. Stephen Short reports from our archives.
If all you know about gay culture is what you see at annual gay pride parades, namely men in too little clothing or too much mascara and dykes on bikes, then you might learn something by visiting San Francisco's Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgender Historical Museum in the heart of the city's Castro neighborhood.
I think what this museum really does is to talk about sexuality, particularly queer sexuality, as a social and political process.
Amy Suaoshi is one of three curators for the current main exhibit titled Our Vast Queer Past. She says one of the museum's goals is to normalize sexuality. But these displays also try to address broader issues.
It's also very much an issue of social justice, not just, you know, around issues of sexuality, but also for folks of color, for immigrants. The ways in which people of marginalized sexualities have also aligned with other marginalized communities in America makes this very much a story of social justice.
One of the first things a visitor encounters in the museum is a beat-up circular wooden table. You'd be forgiven for thinking that they forgot to put this away during construction if it were not encased in plexiglass and labeled.
This is Harvey Milk's kitchen table. It was actually in Harvey Milk's kitchen. It's the table that he organized on, that he ate on, that he laughed at. I mean, not laughed at, but laughed upon and cried upon, likely.
But when he was running for supervisor, or at least thinking about doing it, it was probably planned
exactly,
around this table.
Yeah. I mean, this table was used for everything.
Milk was the first avowed homosexual, to use a term from that time, to be elected to the San Francisco County Board of Supervisors, or anywhere else for that matter. He acknowledged the depth and diversity of the gay community in this local San Francisco TV interview from 1978.
How close am I to the gay community? Nobody can be close to the entire gay community because we go from the extreme left to the extreme right. And I am a good old-fashioned Harry Truman, Adlai Stevenson Democrat. I sit in the middle. Those on the extreme left think I'm too conservative. Those on the extreme right think I'm too liberal.
Supervisor Milk was assassinated in his city hall office less than a year after his election. The state of California designated May 22nd as Harvey Milk Day in his honor. Time magazine includes him on their list of heroes and icons of the 20th century. The museum includes video and audio excerpts from groundbreaking gay rights demonstrations and parades, matchbooks from many early gay bars, and even a few sex toys. Visitors can see the sedate outfits worn by Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon when they received the first same-sex marriage certificates in San Francisco, along with Harvey Milk's flamboyant pink sunglasses. More poignant than such public materials, however, are what appear to be mundane showings of home movies made by regular people prior to the gay liberation movement. Nothing racy here, just picnics and swim parties. But the fact that these were same-sex gatherings could have gotten these people arrested or might have led to violent attacks, as explained here by Del Martin in this archival tape from the museum.
We were really dealing with people who were had internalized homophobia, although we didn't know that word then, and with due cause, because we were considered illegal, immoral, and sick. And that's heavy duty to deal with.
Martin and her partner Phyllis Lyon are included in the oral history feature at the museum. The two women were pioneers in gay rights starting in the 1950s, a time before such an idea had even been formed. Curator Sue Oshi says histories of gay people can be difficult to locate,
particularly if they led lives that were more discreet,
because friends or families often toss out any evidence that could be associated with a homosexual lifestyle, either to save the family from embarrassment or because they just don't see the significance. The Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgender Historical Society, which runs the museum, is trying to change that.
It's really just to collect histories of everyday people. And so that's why we're a community kind of organization that preserves people's everyday lives, particularly people's lives who would be erased, overlooked, and neglected or deemed inappropriate.
Sue Oshi notes that the stories of these individuals, known and unknown, foster discussion about sexuality. Sex may be a private affair, but sexuality doesn't have to be.
This is to be played only in the event of my death by assassination.
There were major risks to such openness before the 1970s, and they continue today. Known homosexuals can still face loss of jobs, loss of contact with family, and even loss of life. Harvey Milk was well aware of this, as we hear in this tape that he recorded to be played in the event of his death.
I stood for more than just a candidate. I have never considered myself a candidate. I have always considered myself part of a movement, part of a candidacy.
The GLBT History Museum hopes that putting this once-hidden movement on display can help visitors, whether gay or not, to better understand gay life. And perhaps that understanding will even lead to acceptance. In San Francisco, I'm Stephen Short for Cross Currents.
The GLBT Museum is offering free admission tonight. They close at 7 p.m. You still have some time to head on over. Been listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Zoe Bresny, Julie Kane, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, RTM's Conahovs, Holly J. McDeed, Erica Mu, Nina Nicole Morente, Mary Reese, and Stephen Short. Today's show is engineered by Seth Samuel. Our senior editor is Casey Miner. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. Thanks to City Car Share, which provides an alternative transportation option for our reporters. City Car Share is online at citycarshare.org. And thanks to you, we are listener-supported radio. Tune in to Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We continue our series reporting from the Fruitvale and San Antonio neighborhoods of Oakland.
Youth are very resilient, and they come to this space still with a love of life and still with a love of learning and a love of each other, and you know, just kind of trying to figure out how to make sense of this crazy world that we've kind of provided for them as adults.
That's tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents.
If your fool's gone for a walk without you, grab your monkey and a drum. My paws to take you down to find him, but no walking here, you gotta run. 'Cause it's a fool.
The song you're hearing is by Tara Linda. She started in music as a drummer in punk and rock bands in Texas and later switched to Latin torch songs, especially those with accordion. She now plays that instrument, which she says can take you around the world from China to Mexico to Germany. In fact, she starts a summer tour of Europe next month. And if you'd like to hear her a little closer to home, Tara Linda and the Rumor Mill will be performing tomorrow at Yoshi's in her hometown of Oakland. The show starts at 8 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
He'll distract you so you fall again madly. And he'll be without you. Grab your compass and a rock. See, a fool knows it was your idea, but he's all action when you just talk. 'Cause it's a fool.